it takes a lot to get from now to March, and I don't want to overlook the big challenge that we're facing. And I don't want my mind convoluted with, you know, thoughts that are premature or ones that I'm worrying about beyond what the current situation is, which is us trying to go achieve what, you know, we all hope we can achieve. And that's where my focus is, and that's what I'm excited about. So let's go, baby. Put me in, coach. I'm ready to go play.
So it comes down to this. Based on everything you've heard over the last week or so, you've heard Tom Brady now this morning on the Greg Hill Show. Are you concerned? Anybody worried about it? Anybody concerned about it? I'm not saying it's not a story.
Am I concerned about them doing the interview with Tom Brady?
No. Concerned about, you know, what we've gone to here over the last week. I just think Brady's been doing this his entire career. And he's probably one of those that pisses and moans behind closed doors. And then when they say to him, can you help us out? And we'll get you a left tackle and we'll get you a receiver. We'll get you this and get you that. He gives in at the end. And so he's taking less money. But is he pissed off about it?
Do you think there's some sort of bartering going on? Say, listen, okay, Brady, if you take $10 million less, I will get you a left tackle, a good one, a slot receiver, and a tight end. If you agree to that, I'll do that for you. I'll get that for you.
No, but I think you know.
I'm talking about in the past, Berrios. Lou has officially fallen in love head over heels.
I'm like Mutt. I heard
with Wes Welker 3.0.
No, I saw you look good.
He looked great.
How could you tell anything but it came on Thursday night? You look at Detroit.
Just watching him run his routes. That's all. He ran like that Edelman route in that fourth and whatever it was, two. They look good. The one returns, got some extra yards.
The one I would say,
make the team or not, but
and I think a few of the beat guys have written this. The one that I would buy into right now would be the undrafted free agent in Jacoby Myers, only because what you saw Thursday night is what these writers have been seeing every single day at practice. So this has been consistent. By the way, they were tweeting out again today. He looked very good today. So this has been a constant from day one, dating back to the spring, where this kid is showing them something that he's beyond an undrafted free agent. But the rest of it, I mean, first of all, there wasn't a single offensive lineman that started in that game that's going to play in any of the regular season games. And yet, your quarterbacks never got touched in the entire
game. How about the kid from Denmark? The kid from Denmark. Charles Froholt. Frodo.
You might make the team. You might make the team. He's the one guy that might make the team.
I thought it was interesting, though.
A guard.
Because I thought, like, Jacoby Myers, for example, you know, I know he, great game, made all the catches, made that nice breakup, too, on the ball he couldn't catch in the end zone. But it was funny, when they isolated him, because I guess, you know, his speed, I don't know what his 40 speed was, but it wasn't great. That's one of the reasons
4.6.
Right. Well, when they isolated him, you could actually see it. You know, it's not like he's
not fast,
explosive by any means, but he gets to where he needs to get, and when he's in his area, he catches it.
Yeah, and then they were asking Bill about that, because his 40 time in the combine was like 4.63, and you know, and sitting there going, okay, so there's not like there's going to be some huge, you know, uptick in speed after the preseason and, you know, going into the season. You're not suddenly going to run a 4.53. You just got to – the most important thing is to know where to go. And not necessarily specifically like one specific spot, but the general area based on the coverage. And if he can do that, he's better than, you know, 80% of the players, you know, that are in the league.
Yeah, I would say looking at that game on Thursday night, Lou, you look at every player, you say, oh, my God, they're unbelievable. And then you look at the guys who were playing, and a majority of the guys who were playing are not going to be on this roster. Okay?
Yeah, but isn't it better than looking like the Lions?
Of course it is.
That's all I'm saying. They could have looked like the Lions and said, what the hell?
Yeah.
They're up there against guys that may not make the league, and they look like crap. At least I thought they showed. I thought they looked pretty good. And even N'Keal Harry made that really nice catch.
Two great catches.
What did he do? Is it his hammy?
No, this time I think it was his ankle.
It looked like his ankle, but
yeah.
I just like the way that he kind of – I couldn't believe he stayed in the game after that catch. He hobbled out to the out, and I'm like, what is he doing? Yeah. They finally got him out of the game. But I like the fact that he wasn't going to come out.
Yeah.
I like that.
Well, I do and I don't. I mean, he's doing the right thing. He's a young kid. He's trying to show that he's going to play hurt. And the Patriots obviously are like, no, this is not the time to be a hero.
No, but he could have stayed down. He could have hobbled off the field and been like, I'm done. Instead, he hobbled his ass back to the huddle. He hobbled his ass back out to the outside.
Yeah, they called. They were like, wait, he's actually going to run downfield. No, timeout. So here's the one thing I wanted to do, and I'm not sure you wanted to, but we started off the show talking about the Brady interview, And I thought, you know, Greg Hill and those guys did a great job interviewing Tom. He's obviously in a happy place right now, regardless how many people think he's pissed off. But Fitzy asked this question, and I was actually curious to know how we would handle it. And it's a softball. It's an easy one. But it came down to Brady's favorite throw.
There was a lot of ones to Moss. There was some to Stallworth, some ones to David Patton. We always got to kind of pick the long ones. There was a cool one I threw to Brandon Tate against the Minnesota Vikings. I fell down, or what happened? I scrambled, and then I just turned around and I threw it to Brandon Tate. It was at home. Brett Favre was the quarterback, and he caught it and ran for a long touchdown. That was a pretty cool play. I threw one from my butt one time against the Bengals to Patrick Pass, like a 7-yard gain. So that was pretty good, too.
Yeah, but see,
no left-handed passes or no look passes yet, but I'm working on those. So those might be in the repertoire this year. We got to try to add some to the top 10. It's going to be cool.
Is that a shot at Patrick Mahomes?
Left-handed, no looks.
You know, I can't throw a left-handed pass and I'll be an MVP and all that stuff, but, you know,
that's a shot.
I'll work on it.
He doesn't like Mahomes. Headline. Ready to take a shot at Mahomes.
Who's got that headline? Somebody's got it right now, right? But to me, that wasn't even the most significant thing. Just even before that, you know, the first question as far as, I guess, his favorite throw. And what do you think his favorite throw would be? There's the one against Troy.
50 to Moss?
Troy Brown. I know, but that was, you know, the number 50.
Yeah.
Number 50 touchdown. But was that a difficult throw?
Just what it stood for. I think, but wasn't that the one that broke the Moss had the record? And
against
he had
Giants
50
on
the same
road.
Play against the Giants? It was at home, wasn't it?
See, I would go back, Eve. I'm trying to figure out, maybe the question needs to be, what was his most difficult throw that he was the most proud of?
How do you narrow
that? That would be the one, because he talked about it. He's like, well, that one wasn't really hard. The coverage was easy.
Remember he threw that one a couple years ago and he's getting smoked, and it was like seam route to Gronk over the middle, and that was the one where everyone's like, see, he's not afraid of taking a hit.
Yeah.
Got smoked, and it was a perfect pass to Gronk. I mean, there's a lot of them. I don't know how the hell.
Who do you think?
I was
going to
say, how do you narrow it down when you've had the career he's had? You talk about memorable throws, historic throws, record-setting throws. How the hell do you narrow it down? A
couple throws in that drive versus the Rams in the first Super Bowl.
Right.
Well, I mean, listen. If he, you know, earlier in the discussion, it was all right. I'll let you know if I'll put it in the top 10. And Fitzy mentioned the throw that he threw to Troy Brown against Miami. In that game, and you would see Steve Burton like running down the sideline in a suit, and that was in the top 10.
Yeah, he did his Toyota jump. That jump,
yeah, that was in the top 10, and I remember that one because
that was a hell of a
play. I just remember just even the you know how important it was for us to beat them there, and how difficult it had been in the past, and how much fun it was on the bus ride to the plane.
Speaking of Burton, think he took our advice Thursday night at halftime?
I know he heard us.
You did because I wanted to hear it. And I heard it right away. He like misspoke. He said like he missed a word or something early on in that first question. I was like, oh no, he's rattled.
Bill Belichick standing by with Steve Burton.
All right, guys, thank you very much. Joining me now is Patriot head coach Bill Belichick. I want to talk about how you guys have been able to spread the ball around in the first half. Good complimentary.
Right there. Right there. That was it.
Like, oh, he's done. He's rattled. Now he's rattled.
Good complimentary.
You think he regretted it, complimentary? Like, he didn't want to use the word complimentary, but he said half it. It was like, oh, screw it. I don't have a better word. I don't have a replacement.
So he heard us, though. Was he working on it all game? Was he?
I don't care.
Keeping it simple?
Well, I mean, I know it's always an issue going into the game.
All around in the first half. Good complimentary.
Yeah, we've had good protection, and we've had a lot of different guys make plays, so that's always a good thing.
Brian Hoyer. Talk about him a little bit. He's sort of a forgotten man. I know you haven't forgotten him, but he's done well in the first half so far.
Yeah, we've moved the ball pretty well. You know, we had good field position after the interception. We had a couple long drives there. So, that's good. You know, hopefully we can be consistent.
All right, Coach, good luck to you in a second.
All right, thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Good to see you, man.
Thank you.
I'd give him a based on past performances.
Yes.
I would give him a B.
I thought it was good.
I'd give him a B.
No, because I think he came back from it well.
Yes,
you know what
recovered.
I mean? I was Raiders going to be rattled there with that first one, but I think he showed.
So you thought the first question was going to rattle him and the second one was going to suck.
Right, but no, he
recovered.
He regrouped and he was
got
great.
Hit right in the gut and said,
beautiful.
Oh.
All right, back to the phone calls. We go. Here's Brock in Middleborough.
Brian Hoyer. Talk about him a little bit.
Talk about him. Hi, Brock.
So many people are approaching this contract situation just blinded by their love of the Patriots laundry.
A lot of
it's
people
such
are,
a
yes.
Homer take. Yep. It's such a homer take to just completely disregard the fact that Brady knows if he performs well for another team, that's going to make the TB12 brand just so much bigger and put so much more credibility behind it. So
I don't know if I buy that.
So
that's your take.
There's no way. There's no way he leaves. There's got to be – he knows that there's got to be at least some possibility that he ends his career like many of the other great quarterbacks who play a year or two in another team, whether they do good or not. But he's betting on himself because he knows if he ends up at another team, which he might not be a good chance, but he might, that it's not the end of the world for him. And to just disregard that is such a homer take.
Well, I don't think anybody's disregarding it, and it's not necessarily a homer take because Brady has had opportunities, and he's taken less money over the years to stay here. So if you're looking at it now at age 43, 44, 45.
Well, isn't it opportunities 45, to play somewhere else?
Well, sure,
he's restructured contracts.
Well, he could have been a free agent. He could have gone to free agency.
Right, he restructures them before. This would be the first time it actually runs out, correct?
Yes, because because he's 42 going on 43. That's why. It's a different set of circumstances.
But it is an interesting way to look at it. You look at the TB12 brand, right? Right now we sit there and say, in New England, he can open up a store and it's Tom Brady. If he did go to another city, pretty sure, say Tennessee.
Right.
Could open one up in Nashville.
Okay.
So I mean, just broaden his
brand. It's not that big a market, Lou. It's not like he's going to suddenly broaden his
LA.
Entire. Okay, L.A. probably a little bit bigger market. But if he spends his entire career with the New England Patriots and he plays till he's 44, 45 years old, matter of fact, the fact that he's played to 42 right now already opens up the brand.
Sure.
He's doing something that nobody else has ever done. So I don't think he needs for the TB12 brand to play somewhere else for the next couple of years or even to play with New England and excel over the next couple of years, does he?
No. Is that a good enough answer?
No. No, because if he goes...
he could have said yes.
Well, the whole thing of like this fear...
50-50 chance?
That if he went somewhere else and failed, then it would look bad. It would be like, oh, see, I told you, Belichick, it's all the credit. I don't think, first off, I don't think the competitor in him even thinks that for a second.
I agree.
He would fail.
Right.
And if he, let's just say he went somewhere next year and wasn't good for the next 2 years, would you say, I mean, if he did it at 35, you would say, 33. But if he does it at 43, you know what you'll say. He's getting old. He's 43, 44. Right. So the game declined. That's a no-brainer.
Well, but except the Max Kellermans of the world and people like that will say that. But that doesn't mean that they're right. But yes, there will be a perception out there amongst the national media because it's something they can talk about.
You don't want to hear about Cliff.
They'll do that.
Yeah, but it's like they'll Jordan going to the Wizards and them being like, it wasn't him the whole time. It was Phil Jackson.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Either that or he was just old and wasn't the same player anymore.
This is a debate show.
Right. You don't think that'll happen, though? If he goes somewhere else and he fails and some other quarterback comes here, Stidham, advances, or they get Garoppolo, and the Patriots are successful, you don't think the national media will use that? Oh, they'll be all over that,
sure.
Lou.
Yeah.
Be all over that. It doesn't mean that it's accurate, but you're right. It'll be that he just is 43 years old, and eventually he hit that cliff. All right, 617.
Oh, there you said it, Cliff.
Right, 617-779-7937, right here on OMF.
Keep up with the show on Twitter, at OMF on WEEI. Before, during, and after the show, at OMF on WEEI. Let's get you back to more of Ordway, Merlone, and Fourier right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
This house is not for sale. I said each
Bon Jovi in attendance today, and apparently they were playing the song. Is that the routine? And somebody said, oh, maybe Bill's playing the song for Tom.
Yeah. He's just trolling Tom.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't buy it. Yeah. Whoever's doing the little entertainment stuff is probably sitting there, this will be cute. I'll throw this out, see if I can get a chuckle.
You think what do you think? There's like a DJ? There's a set list.
That's all it is. Set list.
Guy's Bon Jovi. Would this be your go-to Bon Jovi song?
No.
But does Bon Jovi still own that Arena League team? Didn't he own
I think
Arena
so.
League?
I think he still does.
It's like the Arena Bowl League.
They had their championship
like
last night. You know who's doing the play-by-play on ESPN?
Tim Benz.
Meter.
Oh, that's right.
Meter Perel was doing it.
Would you consider this a popular Bon Jovi song?
I would not, no.
Is it a new song?
No, this song came out in 2016.
Somebody put it on the list and said, this would be kind of cute, probably. Right? With the Brady stuff?
Yeah.
I'm not. Yeah, that's what it is.
That's what I'm saying.
Right.
Picked for a reason,
that's
wasn't
what it?
It
is.
Who else was there?
Bill Belichick.
Cassidy was there, too.
Who was there?
Bruce Cassidy, yeah.
Yeah, Bruce Cassidy was
there. Oh, that's right.
Sorry. I said Charlie Cassidy.
Bruins, excuse me? The Bruins were tweeting that out earlier today. All right, we'll spend some time with the Red Sox because this may be the last time we have any opportunity to talk about them.
Oh, my God.
They're dead. They're Dunsky. It's over. If it wasn't over, if you didn't believe it was over last week or the week before, you're kidding yourself now. If you really believe this team has any chance of getting that second wild card spot,
I thought I was pretty optimistic.
I
was holding on for dear life because part of being a professional athlete is kind of being delusional. Not allowing yourself to read the writing on the wall, not listening to what everybody says about you, not allowing yourself to ever give up. But with 42 games left, and what are they, 7.5 games back from the second wild card spot?
Eight in the loss column.
Yes.
I'm going to have to call upon my good friend, our good friend, Trent Dilfer, when he talked about the Patriots when they lost to Kansas City.
They're not good anymore.
They're not.
No.
They're not good. No. I'm officially tagging them with the Dunsky.
The only thing I would question is the Dunsky. Anymore part. You know what I mean? Anymore.
Now, were they good?
No, well, this year, no, they weren't.
No.
I mean, they weren't all year long.
Don't read it to my Trent Dilfer soundbite, okay? Don't be that guy.
He's not.
You know what
I mean.
Didn't
put a lot of thought into that one, huh?
Well, here's the,
I think he was going to be all like,
So here's the worst part about it. The game is over yesterday. It's the first time, actually, Cora brought up the possibility of not making the postseason in the playoffs. But he said, we'll discuss tomorrow. We're going to have a little meeting, and we're going to discuss tomorrow what we do with this rotation. I don't know how you can throw Andrew Kastner out there again. Inning of 2/3, he was god-awful terrible. Porcello, not much better. And then, of course, the guys that you might want to sit the rest of the way, Price, if this wrist thing is an issue, and Sale, do you really want to waste a lot of bullets on Sale the rest of the way?
He looked good the other night.
But how do you sit Price and Sale down right now if you're going to sit Kastner?
Price is already sitting.
And Porcello, right. Well, he's sitting down.
Well, Kastner needs like 63 innings. He's got 8 starts. There's zero chance in hell he reaches 63 innings.
I agree.
I mean, he might get like 30. 35 with the way he's throwing the baseball.
I'm not sure he gets that many.
No, it is. I was looking. So remember after the All-Star break? I think they had won like 5 straight. They beat the Dodgers that Friday night. Erod was outstanding. They're 12-17 since. 12-17. Like, you came back from the All-Star break. You beat the Dodgers. Erod was outstanding. And then all hell just broke loose. No, it is just. And you watch this game, like Sunday's game in particular. Like, Owens, I have no clue why you would call him up and hit him leadoff. And other than the fact that Alex sort of trying to bring back some of the magic he had last year. But I feel like he's like, you sit at the blackjack table and you have like a run where no matter what you do, hell, you could split tens and it works out. It's no big deal. And then so you take that same strategy the next night and you drop like $5,000.
And why isn't it working?
It doesn't work. And it was like Owens, the kid, I think Bradford even had it down. Like, he was struggling against lefties even in AAA. So you call him up, and Mookie sits, and you lead this kid off. Like, I didn't understand why you're giving him more opportunity. Just bringing him up, starting him off.
That made no sense.
Like, nothing is working.
We
and
did
Kastner,
get Kastner already, so it's not like we haven't
God.
Done something to help our ball club.
You remember what they said, the best moves you make are the ones you don't? They never should have traded for Kastner.
Well, the Kastner thing is just funny because he's one of those guys whistling through the graveyard, talking about
how 8 starts left.
Yeah, I have 8 starts left. No. Don't give him another start.
Do you know
we've been fine.
You know that Kastner has never, ever pitched for a team with a winning record in his entire career? And I think when you do that, like, it's just, it is what it is. If the Cubs are awful, they traded him for Rizzo, I think, to San Diego. We went to San Diego, they're awful. Miami, Texas was awful. Baltimore. And when you do that, you don't know how to be a winning pitcher. Like, I'm convinced of that. He's been his whole career. I mean, he's 10 years in the league. He's never pitched. It's the first team he's ever pitched with a winning record.
I would understand that your
point.
Eventually,
you just become like a losing pitcher.
Yeah, that he's had maybe some bad luck. On the other hand, notice he's the one that keeps on bouncing around.
Oh, God.
So apparently he's not good enough
walking
to
guys.
Help those losing teams.
Yeah, but see, again, people mentioned the bullpen. This wasn't the bullpen's fault.
It's everything.
I mean, again, it was more of just the same.
Our bullpen has basically been fine.
Yeah. And remember, it was Dave Dombrowski who last week, when he 2 weeks ago, when he didn't make a deal, said, we've already done our deal. We got Andrew Cashner.
We did get Cashner up.
But he's got to stop saying his name. I would distance myself from the name Andrew Cashner as soon as possible.
I think Alex, after the game yesterday, was praising the bullpen, which everybody jumped on right away because, you know, it was the bullpen. Barnes comes in and gives it up, and then you got to bring in Weber, who got sent down here today. Right. But, I mean, you know, when your starter goes inning two-thirds, when Taylor, Walden, and Evaldi give you what they give you to kind of get you in the game, yeah, you'll praise that part of your bullpen. But you can't ignore the fact that, you still gave it up late. You know, you gave it up. So, I mean, it's like, you know, your starter goes out there, he sucks. Your bullpen pitches well for a while, then late they blow it. Or your starting pitcher pitches great and your bullpen blows it. Or everybody throws the ball well and your offense doesn't score any runs. It's been everything all year long. And then you get in that last inning and it's Christian Vasquez, who had a two-run bomb earlier in the game, tries to bunt. For who? Yeah. Who's behind you?
You know,
what are you doing? You're swinging the bat well. You just hit a bomb.
If you go out there and pretend you was going to butt, I think it's going to mess with your mind a little bit.
They almost played the game yesterday, and you talked about the guy they brought up. So he's in Toledo. They're in Cleveland today, right? So why do they have to bring him up, take an early morning flight, arrive at 5:45 in the morning, Lou, for a 1:05 game? In a starting lineup leading off, why did they have to do that?
No, I think he arrived at like 5:45 in the morning.
But he was in Toledo. Why did you need him for that game? Why were they so desperate in that game? You couldn't use him tonight in Toledo? And he was going up against a left-handed pitcher, correct? And his numbers that I saw were god-awful against lefties in Pawtucket.
Didn't make any sense. I didn't like the Mookie Betts pinch running in the eighth, you know, for Moreland.
Should have been hitting.
And it didn't feel right. And I know when you break down the inning and it was like, okay, well, where was he going to pinch hit and who was going to hit for?
I'll ask you something.
Yeah. So who was he going to pinch hit for? I mean, I don't know, can Chavis hit by himself, for himself? But then again, who knows? Maybe, you know, Michael Chavis was put in the IL with an AC sprain in the shoulder. Maybe he couldn't swing the bat. So you had to pinch hit for him and the DH and who's going to play second if all these things happen. I get all of that. But at the same point, you sit there and say, you had Mookie in a tie game and you had him run instead of hit. You know, so the whole thing was just, then he goes 3-1, Holt swings through it, he gets thrown up by a mile, and you're just like, what the hell? And then Weber comes in, what'd you think was going to happen? I mean, Ryan Weber. No, it is, it's over.
It's over.
We thought it was over at the trade deadline at 4 o'clock. It said it's done. Dunsky, they are done. I don't know where this thing goes from here. You mentioned Price, has he ever come back this year? I don't know.
I don't know.
I think Sale, you throw him.
Yeah.
If it's me, you throw him. And you try to see if he can build off what he just did and finish the year strong for once.
So they're 8 games behind in the loss column. Christian brought up 42 games remaining. So do the math.
32-10. Did I say 10-32? No, 32-10.
So let's say it's 30-12. I did it on 30-12. 30-12 to me is nearly impossible for this team to
agree.
Do it. Okay, nearly impossible. But if they were to do that, both Tampa Bay and Oakland would have to go 500, 21-21 the rest of the way.
Both?
For you to win. Yeah. Both. One of the two. No, they both would because there's only one spot available. So both of them would have to go 21-21 so that you could take over one of those spots. That would be the difference
don't
in
you,
that game.
Don't you think, because even yesterday, you know, my first glimpse, because I feel like Cora's never really mentioned the word playoffs and really addressed it as far as not being able to make it, how tough it is. Like, he'll talk about how things are challenging and how we got to play better.
We're inconsistent.
But he mentioned that. He says, you know, it's been something they've been, you know, doing all season, inconsistent.
I mean, it's something we've been doing the whole season. We've been talking about it, being inconsistent. And that way, it's tough to make it to the playoffs.
That's it. That,
first time.
That to me is...
That's the white flag.
I give up. Guys, yeah. I get it. Like, yeah. I can't do it anymore.
But did you hear him pregame? I don't know. Did you ever find that pregame, Ryan? So pregame, he actually talked about Owings. And he's like, when he came in, I told him, I said, listen, you're on a team that has a chance to win the World Series. And not a fake chance, a real chance. So before the game, he's telling some kid coming up from AAA that this is a World Series team. And then after the game, he's pretty much admitting that, yeah, you can't make the playoffs
doing
this.
It's tough to make it to the playoffs.
It's a quick turnaround. And that game can do it to you.
See that
after watching that game,
that's part of the arrogance and, you know, braggadocious mentality that he has sometimes. That I
confidence.
Think he can.
Yeah.
Well, sure, whatever, call it whatever you want, but you know,
cocky.
This kid doesn't know. Owings, he doesn't know.
But it's the same stuff, right? I mean, you walk away from that Kansas City game and you're like, okay, maybe you can win that game later at a different date. You take the first two, you beat the hell out of the Dodgers the first two after what Sale did in the first game, the second game, and Porcello comes out right away. And just gives up three. And you just get smoked. Like, for a split second, you woke up Saturday morning and said, you know what, maybe they can sweep the Angels. Come back and take this Kansas City game and a further date, and you can look back and say, you know what, that was a 6-1 road trip. See what you can do against Cleveland. But then, typical fashion, you get your teeth kicked in on Saturday, and then you lose a game on Sunday where you just, the game is over, and it goes to commercial break, and you just sit there holding your head, like rubbing your head going, what the hell just happened?
Mm-hmm. Mike Trout like, struck out and grounded out 1-3, so he's got 103 plate appearances at Fenway without a homer. He swings and drives one to left. There's his first home run at Fenway. Yeah. Wow, over everything.
Nice call, Joe.
Yeah, I mean.
And then you knew the leadoff walk in the 10th inning. You're just sitting there going, on four pitches.
Yeah.
You're sitting there going, it's over. That's it.
Sure.
See you later. Thanks for coming. So I look at it now. They're 8 games behind in the loss column. Does anybody think when it's all said and done at the end of September that it's going to be better than 8 games? I think it'll be a lot worse.
Sure.
A lot 13? Worse.
13?
Yes. Something like that.
Yeah, 12,
because 13. Once they know and they figured it out, then, and I think you're right, Christian, first time we've heard Cora throw that, not making the playoffs in there. Once the white towel is thrown out there, you change your whole outlook changes.
Well, but also, I mean, you've had, think about all the different opportunities they've had to gain some ground, to catch up, whether it's Oakland playing bad, Texas playing
bad.
Minnesota, they've had all these different opportunities.
They're not good enough, though.
And they squandered every last one of them.
But they're not good
and
enough.
And I'll go back. You'll go to the trading deadline, Lou.
Yeah.
But even after the trading deadline, I was like, fine. Well, maybe I was just, you know, taking the bait. But I still felt like, and maybe the whole, you know, that whole series against Tampa, they lost that last game. Then they played Tampa, ended up winning 3 out of 4 against the Yankees. And when they got their butts handed to them again against Tampa, and then they get killed by the Yankees. 8 in a row they lose. At that point in time, I was like, wow, you showed. That was what you saw before the 8-game losing streak was everything else that they had left in the tank.
But you're seeing it against bad teams now. I'm sorry. The Angels are not a real good team, all right? By the way, it goes to show you that having the greatest player maybe in the history of the game, because when it's all said and done, he might be that guy, it still doesn't mean squat when it as far as winning enough games to get into the postseason if you don't have enough talent around you.
The problem is, okay, a guy like that, let's say he gets 4 at-bats, how many opportunities?
Can't influence enough
have,
of the game.
You
correct.
Can't influence it.
Correct.
It's like we brag about Jackie Bradley Jr. and how much we love him, but how many times does the ball get hit in his direction?
Yeah. Well, the Jackie Bradley Jr. thing, and by the way, when everybody got excited a month ago and said, oh, he's hitting the cover off the ball, what do you think about Jackie Bradley Jr. now? I said the same thing. We've seen this kid enough. He's 29 years old. He'll play for a month and bat about 450, and then you know he's going to revert right back to what he is, and right now he's batting about 211 overall for the season.
This will be it for Jackie.
This is it. This is, you know what he is, Lou.
No, and more importantly,
you can't depend on him.
Well, I think the biggest thing is I think that Alex knows who he is now. We said this last year, you know, when we talk about, we've seen this whole career for Jackie Bradley Jr., but Alex Cora hasn't. So what he saw last year was a kid who, April and May, just was hitting .170. And then from June to the end of the year, he hit, I think, .280 for the last 3 or 4 months. So consistently, just hit .280. And then the postseason, we know what he did. The average wasn't there, but he had a big series, big home runs, ALCS, MVP, whatever. But to Alex Cora, that player who wasn't right for the first 2 months, found it the last 4 months and thought that he found something, thought that it clicked. Remember in spring training, the winter, who's the one guy you're looking forward to watching? He said Jackie Bradley Jr. because he felt like that last half of the season, it clicked for him. Now I think he can look at it and say, okay, this is the guy that I heard about when I showed up. Because for him, he had 1 year Jackie, saw a guy struggle for 2 months and saw a guy really good for 4. Now I think he's starting to see the inconsistencies and the mind-numbing approach that he takes at times, when it's just like, what? How did this happen so quickly? What happened? Where did you go? What happened with that? I think when this offseason comes around and they say, "Hey, do you want to pay this guy $12.5-13 million in arbitration?" I think this is the time when he says, "Yeah, I'm not sure we do."
I think the offseason will be fascinating with this team because I think they have to make a lot of moves. The next 6 weeks, probably not interesting at all. Bill Belichick will join us coming up at 4 o'clock. We get back to the phone call, 617-779-7937 right here on the Monday edition of OMN.
We're back with more Ordway, Merlone, and Fourier on Sports Radio WEEI.
Back here in OMF, we're down in Foxborough Gillette Stadium. Bill Belichick will join us coming up at the 5 o'clock hour, this hour being brought to you by Arch Painting. It's too bad. It's a hell of a Red Sox. We thought it was a hell of a Red Sox team. They won 108 games last year, right? We thought maybe there would be some type of carryover, right? And none of it actually worked. None of it worked whatsoever. And so now you're looking at a team.
It was a disaster when you think about it.
No, they got major decisions to be made here, Lou.
No, I'm just saying $240 million. You should be in it. You should be in it in September.
You would think?
You should be in it. You should be in the playoffs, but let's just say you should be in it meaningful games in September. And again, we go back, and I know it. What's today? August? What is today? 11th? 12th?
12th.
It's not like it was over on Sunday. I mean, it was over, you know, August 1st. $240 million and two-thirds of the season's meaningless because, you know, I mean, a third of the season's meaningless because two-thirds of the season you were that bad. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's going to be one of the worst.
They're already out of it.
Yeah, one of the worst turnarounds. They're going to end up winning, what, maybe 85, 86, 87 games, something like that?
Yeah, I mean, 81, 81 is 500. I don't know, give them 83, 84.
Yeah.
Maybe?
Slightly above that. Because I don't know what they're going to be like for the next 6 weeks. It could really get worse right now because you wonder, you know, whether guys' heads are going to be into it. But I think you're going to get a lot of conversation in the next few weeks about dealing these guys away.
Which guys?
Well, Mookie Betts will be the first one that'll be talked about. Now, you'd love to have him because he's a terrific player. But can you really go into next season with Mookie Betts as the biggest asset you have on this team and then lose him at the end of next year? If he's not going to commit to you in this offseason, based on how many needs you have right now, I'm looking at the needs they have, both starting pitching and bullpen help, there's no way you can commit for 1 year to Mookie Betts with the understanding that he's going to free agency and your chances of getting him are slim. Can't do that. You got to deal him.
Listen, I've convinced myself now for some time that they should deal him. You know, and because I just believe that offensively, when you know, it's not like David Ortiz leaving and saying what the hell they're going to do in the middle of this order. You know, I mean, if David Ortiz leaves, and it took him a year before they went out and got J.D. Martinez, I'm not sure J.D. opts out at 23-75, whatever the hell it is. Now,
not
the next few years are 19. But, I mean, even if you could lock him up at that number for 3 years, get rid of the 19s, and you got 3 years, 70 to 75 million. If you sit there and say, I got J.D., Mookie, I mean, J.D., Xander, Devers, Benintendi, Vasquez, all right, I got a pretty good core of a good offensive team. And if you commit to Mookie Betts, even if it is 10-350, and that's on a low end,
oy.
I mean, I think financially, you're going to look at your team, and John Henry, you're going to sit there and say, I'm diving back, I'm going to be 240 to 260 the next how many years just to compete again?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure you do that.
The fact that they're as high as they are with their payroll, and this is the result.
It's ridiculous.
It's got to be, I mean, frustrating is not a good enough word. I mean, you got to be angered by the way things are going right now. Because when you look at just the wild card spot, fine, you wanna sit there and, you know, take a little, you know, not play as well as win as many games, but you're 8 in the loss column and you have Texas in front of you, Oakland,
Texas
Tampa,
behind you.
Oakland
but
in front of you.
But not far
Minnesota.
Behind you. Right.
It's amazing because not only you have the teams that you're chasing, you have other teams chasing you.
Yeah. I said that to you a few weeks ago. The biggest problem they had was it wasn't one team. It was just the Rays you were chasing. You could win a three-game series against the Rays. You could catch up maybe. The problem is when you put that many teams in the mix, it's a killer. You really got to play great baseball.
Yeah, but don't you think it's compounded by the way that they're playing and the things that they're doing? Even, you know, even from what is it? Devers is trying to steal third with one out, and then it was his call. Vasquez doing the same thing with a sacrifice fly. It was his call. Like every article I'm reading, it's like in parentheses, his call. It's like they're just doing whatever they want to do. And then you could say, well, one play doesn't make the difference, but it seems like it's more of a general just philosophy as far as, hey, the ship's going down. I got to be the one to save everybody.
Yeah, I think that's
be the one to save everybody. So let me do something drastic to try and, you know, maybe get a spark, and it ends up hurting them instead of helping them.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think you try to do far too much when you see it going down. But, you know, when you talk about the base running and we're talking about defense because they've been sporadic during the course of the season, doesn't it really come down to the starting pitching was not good enough? You can't win when you're 1 and you're 1A, and they're one of the unique teams that have a 1 and 1A. are underperforming. And then on top of that, you got no true closer. You got no true bullpen. The end of your bullpen is missing maybe two arms, two quality arms. Yeah. I'm sorry. You're not going to get it.
Well, you entered the season with a major weakness, and that was bullpen. We all know that. And your starters made it look even worse.
Correct.
Because they couldn't give you length, even after the April, and they wanted to take care of this guy and shorten this guy and skip this guy, and there were some short outings in April. You figured by May, by June, by July, your rotation would start to carry you. They would give you six. Every once in a while, you'd throw in a 7 or 8 inning performance, and you'd be able to stay away from the guys that would get you in trouble in this bullpen. Unfortunately, they went the other way. They gave you too many short outings. That part of your bullpen was exposed. A guy like Matt Barnes is overused right now. You wonder what he's got left in the tank, and it's just a matter of time before Workman starts showing like Matt Barnes.
You know, Bill always talks about how you overcome injuries. So injuries, just a bunch of injuries to the team, maybe a tight end, a tackle, a linebacker, or a safety. You can overcome that. It's it's three injuries at the same position that you can't overcome. So I look at the starting pitching, and you go, all right. One guy struggling, you could probably overcome. Every now and then, every fifth start, this guy is struggling. Maybe he's 50-50, you don't know what you're getting. But you can't have the entire starting lineup of pitchers sitting there and, it's a crapshoot whether or not they're going to perform
or
not.
But it's not because of injury. Matter of fact,
I know, but I'm just using that parallel. The fact is that it's basically the same mentality. So, okay, if one guy, you can overcome one guy suck. You can overcome a Cashner. If Porcello is playing well, Rodriguez, Sale, and Price, you can overcome Cashner. Because every now and then, maybe the lineup gives you 10 runs or 12 runs. Who the hell knows?
That's right? The only way they've been winning.
And that's it. So it eventually catches up to you. When you look back, you look at all the wasted opportunities, and you sit there and go, we should have known better.
Yeah, I think my problem with them is they can't use injuries as an excuse. Matter of fact, the Yankees, who are leading the division by a zillion games right now, could use that excuse. Houston could use that excuse. Cleveland earlier this year could have used that excuse. All teams that are doing better than them that have had far more injuries than the Red Sox have had. Go to the phones. Here's Paul in Westfield. Hey, Paul.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
What's up, Paul?
Christian, Glenn, I want to remind you of what you were educating me on this year. And Professor Barrett brought this up. Our only pitcher under ERA of 4 is Price. So our pitching staff was terrible this year. And then the relievers come in and go from aces to load them up and then walk in a run. So the offense, as you've also noted, is number one in the league. So, Glenn, I got to ask you this, bud. Like Mookie and JD are number 3 and 4 this year. 1 and 2 are what a pleasant surprise. With the strongest offense, do you think it's fair to blow up or trade away an asset when they have the best offense in the league? And do you think you can get anything worth someone like Mookie, who has, 5 games with 3 runs, home runs in 1 game? I mean, these kids, and JD's batting almost .500.
Hey, Paul, I love Mookie Betts. I love his game. He's a free agent.
This isn't about
next year.
Not liking Mookie Betts, the player.
No, I love the player.
At all.
I'd love to keep him. But you can't go into next season with that uncertainty that he goes to free agency and gets up and leaves and goes to Atlanta or somewhere else or to the Yankees. Are you kidding me? You can't do that.
I tell you, it's not going to be easy, though, in the offseason, because Mookie's got 1 year left.
Right.
And the deal he's looking for, it's not like, I don't know, is there a wink-wink? Do you know where he wants to go? Is that even a fit? Like, people always speculate about Atlanta. Okay, I don't know. Is Atlanta interested? Are they going to sit there and say, we'll open up the bank? You come here for a year, we'll give you whatever you want? Do they have the players in that system that they'd be willing to give up for 1 year of Mookie with no uncertainty of him coming back?
They do have the young players. That's a good minor league system.
Sure.
Okay? Some of those young players are in the bigs right now. That is a team that, if there is a wink-wink, if they truly believe they can sign him long-term, would be worth getting him a year.
All I'm saying is that with Chris Sale having 3 years left of one of the best contracts in baseball, you give up Moncada and Kopech.
Yep.
Mookie Betts, 1 year left at $30 million in arbitration, knowing there's a 10-year, 12-year, $400 million deal that he's going to accept. That might make a lot of teams sit there and say, sure, we'd love to have him, but we're picking up a lot of cash and a lot of uncertainty whether he's going to walk in a year. What are you looking for in return? It's not going to be our best pitching prospect and our best hitting prospect for Mookie. If they do deal him, I think there'll be people here, too, that will sit there and say, maybe that wasn't enough. Yeah, that's a tough trade.
And you got to find that right team. I agree. It makes it very difficult. Tony's in Bridgewater. Tony.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Hey, Tony.
These people that are calling, we all know the Red Sox had a bad year this year, but it's not the end of the world when you say in the offseason. Glenn, you sound like that's the end of the Red Sox. Don't forget,
Porcello's
coming off. Porcello's coming off the books for $20
million. Right.
That Sandoval's coming off the books for $20 million, okay? Right. Morland's going to be off the books. Pierce, they're going to have money if they want to do Mookie. What they have to do in the offseason is get rid of Price. If they have to eat $10 million of that $30 million, that's fine. He's got 3 years left. A lot of teams would want this guy for $20 million a year for 3 years. The Cardinals, the Cubs.
Maybe.
We can go on and on.
He's your best starter right now, though.
Well, he's hurt.
He's second best starter. Rodriguez is the best starter right now. Price, you have to get rid of just for tranquility in there.
But Tony, one thing. I know, when you talk about these numbers, remember that the bump from Bogarts and Sale, that gets rid of Sandoval's cash coming off the books. That's even, okay? Mookie Betts is going to go from 20 to 30. That's 10 more million for Mookie, so that cuts Porcello's 20 in half. So essentially, by losing Sandoval and Porcello, if you re-sign Mookie with Sale and Bogarts' bump, you've saved $10 million.
Okay.
230 is your payroll.
And then you've got Pierce and you've got Moreland. I get it. That's 25. Maybe you can get up to 30 with Holt.
Whoa,
so you're in that range.
I'm trying to say, you got 30 teams. I mean, you want guys that are in their mid, you know, what's Mookie going to be, 27? I mean, this is the kind of guy you want to build around. He's a 6-tool player if you count between his ears. You want to lose, like, people are get rid of him. If you don't want to sign, I agree.
But you
can find a way to make this work with him.
Okay, but you've got to do it in this offseason, Tony, right? You've got to address it this offseason and say to him, do you want to be here? We love you. We're willing to go this high. If he says no, Tony, what do you do then?
I agree with you, Glenn, but what I'm saying is people are calling up, we can't afford him. The Red Sox are going to – it's not true.
Well, they can afford him. They put out $240 million this year. They can afford him. But all I'm saying is if he doesn't want to be here or he's not willing to commit in this offseason – you got a problem. Now, maybe he looks at it and says, well, this wasn't an MVP season for me. I want to wait until next year because I can get better numbers and make more
when
money.
When Dave Dombrowski, before the year started, said, you know, there's a lot of guys coming up in free agency and we're not going to be able to keep all of them. Who did he mean? Brock Holt? Mitch Moreland? Pierce?
I think he meant
because
like
he already re-signed Sale. He already re-signed Bogarts. You've got JD and Mookie. We all know that was it. Did he mean Porcello?
Right,
he's not going to be able to keep?
Maybe.
Maybe it was only Porcello,
right?
Because I would say financially, I don't know moving forward if they can keep JD and Mookie. So fine, you let JD opt out and he walks. Now you got $30 million on Mookie. Now if he walks, you have two holes. Now if you can sign Mookie long term and JD walks, then I would sit there and say, all right, there's $25 million, whatever, off the books. I don't want to lose JD, but I don't know if you can keep Mookie and JD. And if JD's the first guy to leave, now you're in a serious hole if Mookie's not on an extension.
I just don't know.
Because he might walk, and now you got nothing in the middle of that order.
I just don't know how you cannot address it in this offseason. And if he doesn't want to address it, it could be that Mookie Betts doesn't want to address it. He may not say, no, I don't want to play for the Red Sox. I love Boston or whatever. But for him, it may be an ego thing. It may be I can get two or three teams interested and really jack up the total. It might be a little game with him. I want to make as much money as I can and go to free agency. But if you're the Red Sox, can you really afford to let him go to free agency next year?
How many free agents in the class of Mookie Betts go to free agency and come back?
You don't see it anymore, though,
do you? They extend.
Right.
Or they're Bryce Harper and walk.
God, all the best players have all done it, except for Harper. That's it.
It just doesn't happen.
That's crazy.
I just don't think...
But even Harper walked. It's not like he got through and said, all right, I'll come back to Washington.
Yeah, wherever Tony was going at the start of the conversation, because I don't think this is a team you're blowing up. You have a lot of talented players on this team, but you've got to make some decisions in this offseason. You've got to fix some of these holes. You can't come back next year, as Christian was saying, with a $240 million payroll and, you know, be eight games out in August for the second wild card
spot. Yeah, let's add to it.
Right?
Yeah, that's our problem.
Embarrassing.
We didn't spend enough money.
It's embarrassing.
No, let's add to it to bring back the same team.
Yeah.
We really don't need to be popular. We need to win.
True statement. True statement. I'd rather win than be popular. How about you?
I'm with you.
Well, usually if you win, you are popular.
Yeah, and even if people don't like you, so what? You still won. How about that?
Well, who's not going to like you if you won? They're going to like you, right?
What?
Well, David Price. Did they like him? They liked him last year.
So you open your gap again, and then you realize how much you don't like him.
Or, you know what, you mentioned the trade deadline being where it all ended, and I said, okay, that the end of that eight-game losing streak, maybe it was the David Price calling out Eckersley again. Maybe that's what it was.
Ooh. It's interesting. I mean, certainly he's pitched poorly since then, right?
I'm sorry.
But now he's got
You can just
excuse.
Tell.
He's
it was just. I'm just curious to know how this is going to – are they just going to be like, screw it, sit this guy.
Yes.
Hey, how many guys from Pawtucket like Owings are we going to see trying to get a shot?
Let me ask you this. Do you think they'll get closer than eight games? Maybe a game.
You said it. You said 15.
It's going the other way.
September?
It's going
what are we playing for? No, nothing. None of our studs are nothing. Playing, and we don't care what our record is now because we're not getting anything for it anyways.
Pride.
Let's do it.
Playing for pride.
Oh, yeah.
Power.
Oh, wrong quote. Wrong quote.
All right, we got Bill Belichick. He is coming up next as we broadcast the first Patriots Monday of the season. We are live down here at Gillette Stadium. The coach is next.